Welcome to episode 29 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Borzeski in Pennsylvania. Joining me as always, Jeff Smith in Washington.
Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
Annika Svartsen has won the U.S. Women's Open. She did so in an 18-hole playoff over Pat Hurst, which basically ended on the first hole when she took a two-shot lead, birdie to bogey, and has captured a title that's eluded her for the past 10 years when she won them pretty easily back-to-back in 95 and 96. How much of the U.S. Open did you manage to watch, Jeff?
I caught a little bit of the last round and then some highlights from the playoff, but I did happen to see her before the U.S. Open. They had an interview, and she was just really saying how important this event was, and so, hey, kudos to Annika Svartsen.
Surviving an 18-hole playoff, Annika was several shots clear of the field early on in the round, then kind of gave it back. She yanked a wedge or something into a little creek in a water hazard on, I believe, the 7th hole, and then bogeyed 8 and 9 before birdieing 10, I think 16 and 17 on the way coming in. Pat Hurst, of course, played well to par the last hole. Had to make a nervy 5-4 or 5-footer to get into the playoff after Sorensen's putt for birdie on the last hole. Barely lipped out. Michelle Wee, kind of in a hunt, but again, two shots back, had to really... And the thing with Michelle Wee was her putter, we talked about this last week, you remember, Jeff, or 2 weeks ago, when she was qualifying for the U.S. the Men's Open. Her putter was there. She made birdie putts. She made tons of great up and downs for par. Her driver was all over the place, and these fairways were 50 yards wide.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to watch Michelle Wee hit driver, so if it's not one part of her game, it's another.
That's right, and she keeps saying, I'm close. Well, she needs to put it all together. She missed the green with wedges in her hand several times, leading to some of those great ups and downs, but with a wedge in your hands in the U.S. Open, you need to put it on the green.
She's just playing like a 16-year-old right now. I mean, she's got all the parts of her game that she needs, whether it's a short game, long game, she can drive, she's the longest woman playing. But she's definitely going to have to put it together.
Her game right now reminds me of a saying they have in many industries, but I come from software, so it's, you can have it on time with all the features you want and on budget, pick any two. She's got, you know, her putting, her driving, and her iron game, pick any two. At the U.S. Women's Open, she had her putting and her iron game, kinda. Her driving was really nowhere to be found. Really not a U.S. Open type setup with super wide fairways. So, Michelle Wee aside, you know, who's finished, they like to say five shots out of winning all three majors so far this year, but that's really only a tie for those majors. She may have lost in playoffs or whatever. But five shots out again, so better than Paul Creamer, better than Morgan Pressel, Natalie Goldust, Lorena Ochoa, better than everybody except the people that have won a few of them. But the people that were in contention, Pat Hurst, Annika Svartsen, did you really think Pat Hurst had any chance on Monday?
Oh, against Annika? You know, some would say the way that Annika's been playing, sure, she does have a chance, but I mean, no, I think experience tells us that Annika was right there.
Yeah.
So it was great for me. A couple of statements that I picked up in some of the show notes here. Sam went 4 months without a victory, and then in another place, 8 tournaments without winning her longest drought in 5 years. I mean, that's pretty amazing. I mean, it just shows you how good Annika has been,
right?
You know, in the past several years.
Her winning percentage is right around the same as Tiger's, which is about 25%. And it's funny, because Tiger was talking about, in his press conference at the Western Open, was talking about, hey, in baseball, in golf, you fail a lot more often than you succeed. And he said, if you could bat 300, basically, on the PGA Tour with winning, he's like, you'd have a pretty darn good career.
Yeah.
You know, his winning percentage is around 250, 25%, .25 batting average, you know, 250 mm-hmm. batting average. He knows that. So I found that kind of funny, that he was saying, if you could bat 300, you'd be pretty darn awesome, you know.
Right.
Right there. Annika's right there. Just another win for Annika. We'll talk a little bit more about the U.S. Women's Open, though, right after this message from Titleist and Chip Shots from Golf Gods. Stay with us.
In the heat of competition, you should really stick to your go-to shot. For me, that's a tight little draw.
Copy your practice swing and don't think about results.
Just take your time, keep everything nice and slow.
When I'm under pressure, I think about my kids.
I think of my kid, too.
Keep it simple. Play one shot at a time.
Don't be tentative. Stay real aggressive.
Make sure and drink lots of water.
Concentrate on concentrating.
Don't think too much.
Just remember to breathe.
And don't panic.
And one more tip.
Trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of thesandtrap.com.
This week on Chip Shots, if the shoe fits, wear it. Having devoted some primetime coverage of Adidas apparel in the past, it's no secret the staff of Golf Gods are big fans of the golf tech wear put out by Adidas. While we covered the apparel side extensively, there's no doubt Adidas footwear is also hot, or rather cool. The most famous shoe in the line is the Tour 360. The Tour 360 features a proprietary 360-degree wrap technology and has also gained the trust of some of the world's finest tour pros, such as Mike Weir and Jim Furyk, who each wore it during the 2006 U.S. Open. Weir and Furyk weren't the only top 10 finishers at Winged Foot to wear the Tour 360. Affable Englishman Kenneth Ferry, playing in his first major championship, also sported the distinctively designed shoe. All three players were featured frequently in the final telecast. To be sure, the Tour 360 is a breakthrough product. Less than a month after its introduction in 2005, it was honored with the prestigious ISPO Vision Global Sport Style Award for Men's Footwear, a significant award because it encompasses all types of sport footwear, not just golf-specific footwear. Feedback from golfers cites support, stability, comfort, and style as the reasons why the Tour 360 has become their golf shoe of choice. The Tour 360 is available in a variety of color combinations. You can see it, learn more about it, and buy it at golfgods.com. Now back to Eric and this week's podcast.
And welcome back. This week our forum topic of the week is also about the U.S. Women's Open, and it's basically this. Should the U.S. Open, both the men's and the women's, have an 18-hole playoff to decide the championship? Of course, the Masters play sudden death, the PGA does a 3-hole playoff, and the British Open does a 4-hole aggregate score. Should we see 18 holes, or should the USGA, you know, quote-unquote, get with the times, or resolve the thing on Sunday, or what? Your thoughts, Jeff?
Yeah, I think we need to stay away from sudden death playoffs and major championships. I think, you know, the better player could put a bad swing on it in one hole, it could all just, you know, go away. I kind of like Vijay Singh's idea. He suggests for a major championship, he says, I like 3 or 4 hole playoff format. You know, basically you can have 4 holes to play well. I think that will reveal who the better player is. And it requires that whoever it is play tight. If they're the better player, they're going to win. But it's not sudden death and you're out if you happen to put a bad swing on.
I personally like the idea of 18 holes simply because, you know, Sandy Tatum said a long time ago, we're trying to identify the best golfer. And I think that sudden death especially, but even over 3 or 4 holes, you can get a lucky break. One guy gets one birdie, a lucky birdie or something, when, you know, maybe his ball rolls through a bunker or gets a funny bounce or something. That can win it for you. One lucky break. But over 18 holes, those things kind of tend to even themselves out. And right. I like the 18 holes. I don't think we need to, quote-unquote, Americanize and compress and do everything, you know, just to get a winner on, you know. If the true intent is to find the best golfer that week on that course, then I think you need 18 holes to do it. I don't think you need to care about the TV audience, really, if that's your true intent. Certainly, I think the Masters is kind of dumb. The one hole playoff is like, you know, I mean, we've seen it. Larry Mize chips in against Greg Norman, et cetera, you know, it's fluke stuff. Poof.
Right.
Larry Mize is a Masters champion now, you know, it's like, what?
Right.
So the one hole stuff, definitely not. I'm with you there. 4 holes, you know, I think, like I said, if the true intent is to identify the best golfer, you need 18 holes to do it. Kind of sucks that, you know, yeah, you lose 98% of your viewers, but.
Yeah, and I think that a 4-hole playoff is kind of, maybe not the best of both worlds, but it takes into account the fact that you can keep momentum. You can play on the same day, assuming you have daylight. You can, right. You can keep that going, but it's also not, like you say, it's not a Greg Norman going down, you know, on one hole.
Right. Those are our thoughts there. If you have thoughts of your own on that, feel free to comment in our forum. We'll link to it in our show notes. We'll be right back after these messages.
To hit the ball more solid off the tee, you need to swing at a pace you can't control and catch the ball right in the middle of the club face.
You want to hit it a little bit longer, try moving it up in your stance just a little.
You got to complete your backswing.
Try a little pause at the top.
Try a bigger shoulder tap. Grip it more in the fingers and less in the palm.
If you want to hit it big, you got to swing big.
And the most important tip of all,
trust your tight list.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
That was a good shot, too.
Welcome back. We want to get into a couple of things regarding our Australian players on the PGA Tour. Jeff Ogilvie, of course, our U.S. Open winner. Ogilvie has this wonderful place now where he can speak as the U.S. Open champion. And he says in an article we have linked in the show notes, I don't understand why we have to get to the point where we change Augusta National. We had it for 70 years, so why change it? Courses like that make golf more interesting. His point is, distance is ruining the game.
Yep.
Your thoughts?
My thoughts. I don't think they had to change Augusta National. That's the thing. I think Augusta National was what it was. I think that low scores aren't bad. I think low scores are exciting. And I think that, as we've seen time and time again, driving distance alone does not result very often in wins. We've putting the ball on the green and putting well result in wins. And right. We've also shown, Dave's shown in his column, that driving distance doesn't even correlate to putting the ball closer on the green, except 0.4 inches, I think it still is. Putting and hitting the ball on the green so you can putt. That's what wins.
Yeah, well, I think that's the overlooked aspect in this whole argument. argument is the fact that in any other sport, you have growth, you have progress, people run faster, they jump higher, they score more points. But in golf, it's supposed to somehow be different. So we have better conditioned athletes, different fairway conditions, all a various amount of different aspects in this whole argument, and yet we focus in on distance, and we think it's ruining the game, when in any other sport, better conditioning and all of that, it's a good thing. Well, moving on to another Aussie, Greg Norman has given advice to Ogilvy. Basically, the criticism has come
because he has so much experience winning the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Or any major in the United
States. Maybe Norman should have given maybe Norman did give Monty, Phil, and some others some advice. Hey, guys, come here. I got some stuff to share with you. So Norman is giving some advice to Ogilvy, because the criticism now to Ogilvy is, because he's an open winner, why doesn't he go down to Australia and play more events?
Norman's advice is stay away from Mark Hensby.
That's not a bad
idea. That's basically it, yeah. Stay away from Mark Hensby. Don't listen to anything that crackhead says.
Right.
That's what it boils down to. He says, you know, what Jeff did was tremendous, fabulous. I really hope his win results in a resurgence of golf in Australia. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, half of Norman's advice is Norman tooting his own horn.
Well, my thought was that the best thing for Australian golf would be for people like Jeff Ogilvy and others is to go play golf on the biggest stage, win, and it's going to create interest. That's right. The best place to do it.
Yeah. What's the point in having a few people who play in the PGA Tour every year, every now and then, go beat up on some poor, hapless Australians in the Australian Open?
Right. You know, I mean, down there minding their own business, just trying to get a win.
What was it? Stuart Appleby won all three events last year. Okay, great. What is that right. doing for, you know, Australian golf? Besides, more than one guy has left the LPGA Tour, and there's yet another article here on Carolyn Bivens and the job she is or isn't doing in the LPGA Tour. How long do you give her? I've asked you this question before, but, you know, here's yet another article or two out about her reign of terror.
Well, I think you've got to give her till the end of this season, and then there has to be an evaluation. The people that hired her have got to sit down together without her in the room.
She says the board is happy with her.
Yeah, well, that's the buzz, but you're going to have to sit.
Directors and owners are not happy with her.
You're going to have to sit down and talk about that.
We shall see. It's a continuing saga. The Western Open will no longer be a continuing saga because it's been renamed the BMW Championship starting next year. Unfortunately, the Western Open, one of the longest names, you know, I mean, it was a major back in the 1900s. By 1900s, I mean 1902 and so on. So it's going to be hosted at different courses. It's no longer going to be at Cog Hill every year. It's going to alternate between Cog Hill and places like Bellerive and Crooked Stick, of all places. So I don't know why they couldn't have renamed the BMW Western Championship or the BMW Western Open. I think it's kind of dumb that they had to put BMW and nothing else in there.
Yeah, well, that's, again, it's marketing taking precedence over history. It's
sad to see, and Tiger and Phil both commented on the fact that Western part of the name is gone. So the FedEx Cup was announced, of all days, Wednesday before the U.S. Women's Open. I'm not sure whether Tim Fincham is so egotistical that he thinks that he can try to usurp, you know, the LPGA Tour or U.S. Women's Major or what, but announced the Wednesday before the U.S. Women's Open all the details, and basically there's, you know, I haven't seen any good press about it yet, except on PGATour.com. Have you?
Yeah, well, I just have a quote here. Tiger Woods saying, it's an exciting time for golf. It's certainly going to be more exciting for everyone, but also for fans. I mean, I don't know. They're not paying him to say that.
I think he's just happy he doesn't have to play past late August or late September.
Or maybe he's not going to care about the fall
event. Tiger Woods doesn't need $10 million.
Not a chance.
So, I mean, speaking of points lists and cups and things, the Ryder Cup, J.J. Henry has moved from 26th to 6th in the points list. And now from 6 on down, 6 to 10, we have people that have never played in the Ryder Cup before.
Yeah.
If the points list holds up like it is now.
Right.
So
Brett Wetterich, Vaughn Taylor, Lucas Glover, these are not Ryder Cup names. Or this is not what you would have expected.
And like I said before, I think, hey, we got our butts kicked last time with established people. And I also think, you know, they're all saying, oh, these are young guys. They can't stand the pressure. They've won tournaments. A lot of people have said, you know what, I read a quote the other day, I think it was from a European player, he said, all I heard leading up to it was like, pressure, oh my god, you're going to feel so much pressure. He said, by the time I finally got to the first tee, I was relieved to just be playing golf. So the pressure came off, because I didn't have to hear about it anymore. So you never know. I mean, they may play spectacular. The European rookies did fine last time.
Yeah.
I mean, they kicked our butts, so whatever. We got our butts kicked so badly, I don't really care who's on the team. I mean, Tiger, Jim Furyk, a few others deserve it, and they're going to get in fine, but 5 to 10 or 6 to 10, send whoever's hot. I really don't care. See how they... if we lose, it can't be much worse than the last time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's going to take a miracle for the United States just to relax. I don't know. You know, we've had a lot of talk about... what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, you know, players getting along and people not wanting to play together.
Camaraderie.
Camaraderie, trying to get this...
Chemistry.
the chemistry all just right and everything. I think the United States just need to get out there, go play their game. You know, these guys know how to play golf. Just let them do it. But less focus on the zen.
Right.
More focus on the plan.
There's plenty of time for these guys that are, you know, just outside the top 10 that have made previous Ryder Cup teams to win a tournament. You know, Chris DeMarco doesn't deserve to be in the top 10. I don't care what you say. He may be a captain's pick, maybe, but he's really not playing good golf right now. So I don't want him on the team. I mean, he's stinking up the joint, basically. And he hasn't won a tournament in 10 years. 2001, I think, was his last win. So he was great in the President's Cup, but his game fell off this year. So, yeah, he's down in the points. He's, you know, 25th or something, where he should be. So,
well, on to a little more international commentary here.
Someone who's kicked our butts in the Ryder Cup many times.
Yeah, Seve Ballesteros says that the U.S. Open sucks.
Basically.
Yeah.
He turned on the TV for 45 minutes, didn't see a birdie, so he turned it off.
Yeah, well, I read his comments, and the first thing I thought was sour grapes. He couldn't win the event, so now he's just got to disparage it.
And I saw somewhere where he said if he had finished, you know, if he had watched Jeff Ogilvy make par from, you know, a divot in the fairway, and make par without ever hitting the fairway or the green on 17, he might have seen a bit of himself in that.
Yeah.
Thinking it. And, you know, the U.S. Open is not about birdies. You want birdies, you watch any of the other majors, basically.
Right.
The U.S. Open isn't about it. He never won it. I'm with you. I think it's sour grapes. So.
Well, you know, he makes this comment here. For me, it was like watching basketball rather than golf. It's very sad to see real champions finishing plus 20, and I'm just getting teared up. But, you know, it's like basketball would be 50 under in my book, so it's got nothing to do with basketball. I think it's a great test. It's a poor comparison.
It's more like watching soccer.
Yeah, I mean, I think so, yeah.
You can watch 45 minutes of soccer and not see a goal.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's not exciting.
So there, Ballesteros, get your little comparisons right, buddy.
Yeah, soccer, man. World Cup's going on. Should be right in front of your eyes.
Well, apparently, Annika heard his comments and decided she'd had enough of being outside of the United States, so she's now a U.S. citizen. She doesn't want to be an international player anymore.
Well,
she wants to be a U.S.
She's maintaining her Swedish citizenship as well, but she's now also a U.S. citizen. She says, I'm still European at heart, but I've been living in the United States for 16 years.
Question, is she going to play for us now?
No. She said she's not going to play for she's going to play for Europe on the Solheim Cup team. But that's fine, because we kicked their butts last time. They can have her. One of them will not win a championship. I'll put Paula Creamer up against Karin Koch any day of the week. Or Laura Davies. You know, I mean, if Laura Davies is still making Solheim Cup teams, they got to be hurting a little bit.
Well, Zhang Zhang is now the two-chip Zhang. Apparently, well, and I saw the footage, too, of her chipping out of the rough. It was apparent to me that she had a double hit.
She was chipping out of some nasty rough, took a full swing. You can see the ball come up, and then just as her club passes the ball shoots off to the right, clearly not in the direction it was headed. And since there are no flies that large, and because her club was right in the area, it hit her club. And even after seeing what happened was, she initially said, no, I didn't hit it twice, so they let her sign her card, which is under the rules and perfectly fine. But then they looked at the footage, and they assessed her a one-stroke penalty after the fact, and she wasn't disqualified because that's under the rules. You can sign a card if you think that that's true, and then the committee can change their ruling later and change your score. So that's what happened. But she still maintains that she didn't do it. After seeing the footage, you see her looking at it, and she goes, no, I didn't hit it twice. I don't understand how she can look at that footage and go, nope, I didn't hit it twice.
Well, it's plain as the nose on your face. It reminds me of the putt that...
Did she exhale? You know, I mean, the ball shoots way off to the right. What other is there for it?
Maybe she lost... Maybe she had an alien encounter and lost touch with reality for a split second.
Maybe. It brings to mind, a lot of people are questioning whether TV cameras and so on and so on and so on should influence rulings. And I'm of the opinion that, hey, if something happened, if it's the truth, then you do what's the truth, you know? You don't say, oh, but some players don't have the camera on them at all times. Well, guess what? The people near the lead always have the camera on them. So if you're in contention and you do something, you deserve to, you know, I mean, it's not going to matter too much if someone who's 40 shots from missing the cut or 5 shots from missing the cut chips the ball twice. It really doesn't matter. And the truth is that pretty much any event, someone's being filmed at all times. So, you know, if there's a question, they can almost always go back and look. So, this is a case where it was so obvious she had to be assessed a penalty, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, nobody called it in. They just had video of it. I don't even think it aired the video. I think it aired after the fact. So, they had video of it. It was just kind of B-roll footage, you know? They said, hey, do you have footage of this shot? Yeah, here. Oh, yeah, you hit it twice, so.
The USGA, it says here, went to a plasma screen, asked NBC Sports to run the tape in slow motion. So, they saw exactly what anybody who saw it in full motion, that she double hit. It was a double hit. There's no good reason to ignore it. I think you have to look at all the evidence there, and hey, if it's a problem, then you got to fix it.
She was assessed a fair and accurate penalty, so the truth will set you free. And we will set you free now because we're done with the 29th episode of Golf Talk Podcast brought to you by thesandtrap.com. You can check us out on the web at thesandtrap.com and check out our forum. Again, maybe you'll create the forum topic of next week at thesandtrap.com/forum. For Jeff Smith, this is Eric Brzezinski saying fairways and, sorry, greens and putts, according to Dave's statistics. So work on those parts of your games. And sorry, Seve.
Right on, hands. So long.
Bye.